Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bending the Rules by Christina C. Jones, narrated by Adenrale Ojo and Sean Christen. 1. Tony. Today is the day that you'll be nice to him. I repeated those words in my head over and over, trying to make them stick. From the time I woke up, as I pulled into my parking spot at the store, as I waited on customers, and as I drove myself back to the hotel serving as my temporary home, I tried to drill it into my head. I repeated it as I showered, got dressed, got back in my car, and drove to the house. Today is the day that you'll be nice to him. I repeated it as I walked to the door and rang the bell. The door swung open. And there he was on the other side. The first time I'd been face to face with him for 6, maybe 7 years. Today is the day that you'll be nice to him. Tony, he said warmly, extending a hand to me. My gaze rested on his hand, then went up to his face. Warm brown eyes, perfect white teeth displayed in a warm smile. Warm, warm, warm. Annoying. Justin. My tone knocked a pitcher of ice water on his oven-fresh vibe. I ignored his hand, squeezing past him in the door to get inside. Today is the day that you'll be nice to him. Oops. Maybe not. Tony, 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 I heard as I stepped out of the foyer into the living room. I grinned as Justin's younger brother, Jason, walked up, arms extended for a hug. What's up, girl? How you doing? Good, I said, accepting his hug. And I see how you're doing. Where did all this come from? I asked, running a hand over the hair on his face. Where is the baby face I remember?
I let go of the military shave. Less maintenance.
Uh-huh. Less maintenance or more booty? A sly grin spread across his face as he stepped back.
You're not about to get me in trouble, Tony. I'm dedicated to one booty now, and she's an earshot.
I laughed as he led me around another corner to the informal dining room where everyone was gathered. The Josephs, senior and junior, stood to greet me. And then I exchanged hugs with Devin and Reese, Joseph Jr. and Jason's girlfriends. Both women were a little younger than me, but I knew them from all the time I'd spent working my parents' bookstore. Once they sat down, I was introduced to Imara, Big Joe's girlfriend, who was also Reese's mother, and soon enough, we were all chatting like a big, happy family. After a few moments passed, we loaded into the kitchen, grabbing dishes and drinks and plates and napkins to take to the table. Once everyone was seated, it ended up how I should have expected it to end up. I was next to Justin.
Where is that adorable little princess of yours, Justin?
Imara asked, after we'd said grace and began to eat.
Yeah, Mr. Bestseller,
Jason added, swallowing a mouthful of food.
Where is my niece? She owes me $5.
I forced myself not to look in his direction as he answered, though I'd wondered the same thing. Mr. Bestseller was pretty private about his little girl, and limited her exposure to the limelight, which surprised me. The whole sexy single father angle could be a marketing dream, and exactly what I would have expected his fancy New York agent and publishing company to push for. But this wasn't an interview or photo shoot. So was he keeping her away from me?
This is Cat's weekend. She took Bree to visit with her parents up in Boston. They're on their flight back as we speak.
I took a long drink from my water at the mention of Cat, Catherine, Justin's ex-wife. But his explanation meant he wasn't keeping her away from me. Not that it mattered. It didn't. We weren't even friends anymore.
You've never met Bree before, have you, Tony?
Big Joe asked. And I swallowed hard as my mind raced for an answer. The whole table had gone quiet, waiting for an answer I couldn't come up with, but mercifully he kept talking.
With all the traveling you do, I'd guess not. When was the last time you were home?
I stop in to see my parents several times a year, but I'm usually all over the place. The 2 months I'll be here is going to be the longest time I've stayed in any one place in about 3 years.
Do you have a release date for that black romance set in Japan you told us about? Devin asked, and I grinned.
Not yet, I laughed. I do have a phone meeting with the author in a few days, though, and she will be thrilled to hear about your interest.
How many authors does that make now?
Joseph asked, from his place directly across the table from me. She makes number 124 worldwide. Scattered Seas is still small, but we've had 22 U.S. Today bestsellers in the 6 years since I started it, and 3 New York Times bestsellers. I'm really proud of what we've been able to do.
As you should be.
Something like a chill ran up my spine at the sound of Justin's voice. He'd leaned toward me to speak, and awkward, frenzied butterflies bombarded my stomach over the compliment from the man who used to be my best friend in the world.
I knew you'd build it into something great.
For the first time since we'd sat down, I actually looked at Justin. His handsome face, which had gotten me into more than one fight over the years with girls who wrongly thought I was their competition for his affection, had matured from the baby-faced 23-year-old I'd exchanged angry words with 7 years ago. I knew that already. Had seen his face splashed on magazine covers and tablet screens and on TV. But being face-to-face was just different. His facial hair had finally filled in. It was cut low, but I could tell from the stubble that the patchy Anthony Hamilton thing I used to tease him about didn't exist anymore. Fine lines, nothing heavy, just normal aging, textured his golden brown skin. And his eyes, pools of hot chocolate framed by jealousy-inducing thick lashes that had seduced countless girls and then women out of their panties. Apparently, the loss of our friendship had stripped me of my immunity to their charm. Thank you, I said curtly, as I looked away, finding solace in Joseph's face instead. There were no drastic differences between him and either of his brothers, but he was unquestionably more like a big brother to me than anything else. No chance of needing to clench my thighs together there. But I don't do it by myself. Scattered Seeds has a CFO, editorial directors, associate publishers, all of that, which is why I'm able to travel around the world and meet the authors in person, nurture them, talk with them, all of that. From the other end of the table, Imara said,
"Sounds like you work hard to make your authors feel welcome and valued."
I smiled. That is one of my primary goals. If I can't do that, nothing else matters.
That's my girl,
Big Joe said with a broad smile.
Your mama said something about a fiancé last time I spoke to her. Where is this young man?
I choked on the water I'd just sipped. Did she now?
She sure did.
That was supposed to be kept private. Very, very private. Big Joe frowned.
Why so private?
Just, lack of desire for attention. We didn't want to make a big deal of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, you make sure this man understands your father isn't the only man he needs to concern himself with meeting if he plans to marry you.
I nodded. I will absolutely make sure that a conversation happens before then. Luckily for me, the engagement topic shifted gears after that, to Devin's pregnancy. She was barely 8 weeks along, but the whole family knew. I was glad to keep the conversation going by asking questions the others already had answers to. Anything to keep the attention focused somewhere other than me. Before I knew it, dinner was over, and I was excusing myself to get back to the hotel in time for an international call with one of my authors. Allowances had to be made for the time zone difference. I purposely avoided Justin when I said my goodbyes, then headed for the door, digging for my keys as I went.
Engaged, huh?
I heard from behind me, and kept walking like I didn't hear it. I wasn't surprised when Justin jogged ahead to cut me off at the door.
Congratulations.
It's really none of your business. Can I get past you, please? He let out a sigh, then pushed his hands into the pockets of his jeans. He'd gained weight. It suited him.
I was hoping you and I could talk.
We have nothing to talk about.
I beg to differ.
Your begging won't make a difference, I shot back. He scoffed.
Damn, Tony. 17 years of friendship, and I can't even get a conversation?
My nostrils flared, and I took a step toward him. Your ass wasn't thinking about 17 years of friendship when you broke the rules, were you? He stared at me, but said nothing. I stared right back, crossing my arms. After a few seconds, he shook his head, then stepped aside to let me pass. I yanked the door open, but had too much respect for his father to slam it behind me. I saved that aggression for my car door.
Today is the day that you'll be nice to him.
I let out a dry laugh at myself for believing that, as I pulled out of the driveway and pointed the car toward my temporary home. I'd been mad at Justin about the demise of our friendship for 7 years, and unless something drastic happened, would be for the foreseeable future. On the way away from the Wright family home, the sentiment I repeated in my head was a lot different from the one I'd used on the way there. Justin Wright has a lot of goddamned nerve.
Justin. Engaged. That word pounded in my head long after dinner was over. After I'd scooped Bree and Kat from the airport, dropped Kat at home, then made my way to my own townhouse. Bree was a chatterbox, eager to tell me everything that had occurred over the last 2 days in her almost 7-year-old world. I tried not to make a habit of turning her out, but... engaged. When the fuck did that happen? There was a time when Tony wouldn't have even let a man think he could confidently ask her on a damn second date without me knowing him, vetting him, making sure he was good enough for her. And now, I had to find out in passing that she was getting married, and I didn't even know the man's name. That was a big damned difference. It shouldn't have been a shock to my system, considering that Tony had been holding strong in her resolve to be pissed off at me for the last 7 years. I thought she was dramatic and told her so last year, an email that earned me a photo of her middle finger. Had she been wearing an engagement ring in that picture? She definitely wasn't wearing one now, but that was Tony. Non-traditional. Unwilling to be placed in a box, which was another reason why her being engaged threw me for a loop. And that wasn't all that threw me. It had never been wasted on me that Tony was a beautiful woman. I would have to be blind not to notice, but being face-to-face with her tonight, after not having the opportunity in years, was different. Tony was kind of banging. She'd traded the long, relaxed layers that had been her signature look for a short, sophisticated cut that accentuated her high cheekbones. Lips that would have normally only held a swipe of lip gloss were painted deep purple, vibrant against her mahogany skin, giving her an air of mystery that was heightened by smoky eyes. She'd come to the front door of my father's house wearing the hell out of a rich, navy-hued dress that clung to curves I'd never really lingered on before. But in the moment that she brushed past me, walking the familiar to her path to the dining room, I found myself thinking, damn, where did that ass come from? And then I immediately brushed the thought away because Tony was my damn friend. Was my damn friend. Shit, I muttered under my breath, then shook my head.
Are you listening, Daddy?
When I looked down, Bree's big brown eyes were pointed up at me, and her toothpaste-covered mouth was wrinkled in displeasure. Of course I am, I said, bending to drop a kiss onto her forehead before I finished rubbing almond oil in her hair the way her mother had shown me. Why'd you stop?
Just making sure. Anyway, AJ was just spinning the tire swing so super fast, like this.
She put her hands in front of her, frantically mimicking pulling something.
And my hair was going all crazy-like.
She wiggled her arms over her head, getting in the way of me fixing the loose ponytail she'd been wearing to bed under her polka-dot bonnet.
And I was screaming so loud.
I lifted an eyebrow, meeting her eyes in the mirror as she used a towel to wipe her mouth. Wait, you were on the tire swing when this happened?
Uh-huh.
That sounds dangerous, Muffin. You gotta be careful at school, okay? She groaned.
Daddy, it wasn't like super duper fast, just super fast.
Oh, so super duper fast is where things get perilous then.
Yeah.
She giggled as I pulled the sleep bonnet over her head, covering her eyes with it. A grin still covered her face when I pulled it into the right position, then patted the top of her head. Ready for bedtime? I asked, a question I knew would be met with pouting, and my little girl did not disappoint me. She lamented all the way into her room while she turned the lamp on and until she was under the covers. I pulled the bench seat away from the vanity mirror she didn't need, up to the bed, and dropped to a seated position. You want to see what the homegirl Kina is up to for a few chapters? I asked, and the pout melted right off her face. I grabbed Kina Ford and the second-grade mix-up from the bedside drawer and put it into her excited hands. I didn't bother trying not to smile as she eagerly flipped to where we'd left the bookmark last time and began to read out loud. I let her have my full attention as she carefully relayed the adventures of a little black girl who wasn't much older than her, with a big puff of hair, just like hers. We laughed, talked about what was happening, and I got shushed several times as she made her way, stopping on occasion for help with a word. She got through two of the short chapters before the tiredness became apparent in her voice. That's enough for tonight, Bri Bri, okay? Even though she was already half asleep, she whined as I took the book away, putting the kitten-covered bookmark at our new stopping point. She was still grumbling as she climbed from under the covers to kneel beside the bed, where I joined her. She clasped her hands together and closed her eyes, bowing her head for her simple prayers. I sucked my teeth when she ended them by asking for a puppy, then helped her back into the bed and tucked her in. I love you, Muffin.
I love you too, Daddy.
I turned off her lamp and switched on her nightlight, then left her room to head to my office. I took my cell phone out of my pocket and tossed it onto the desk, then dropped into my chair. I was glad to be at home. The last few months had been a whirlwind of traveling, signing books, and grinning in the faces of people I couldn't stand. Oh, and pressure. A virtual ton of pressure from my agent to sign a new contract with Lion Literary, the major company that had published my last six books. I wasn't signing another contract. The book that satisfied my contract with them was done, released into the world with every single one of their ridiculous criteria met. The reviews weren't great. In fact, I was being eviscerated. But apparently, the right amount of snarky attention pushed numbers. I was towing the line of another New York Times best-selling title for a book I couldn't even be paid to read again myself. But I was happy, because I was done. No more sanitizing my characters or their language for a certain audience, appeasing the sensibilities of editors who don't get me or my work, limiting myself to specific types of stories. I was finally free to do whatever the hell I wanted, and I wasn't giving that up. I could understand why my agent was pissed about me refusing a six-figure advance, though. Still, that couldn't be the driving factor behind my decision. It had to be about what it had always been about. What was best for me and my family. Being stuck in a contract that didn't make me happy couldn't be the answer to that. So then, what was the next step? Did I venture out on my own, self-publish? I already had an audience, so it was definitely an option. But hiring editors, marketing, graphics, none of that shit appealed to me. I just wanted to write. But on my own terms, which in a typical contract would be a problem. I pushed out a sigh and stared at my computer screen. It was prompting me for a password, which I already knew I wasn't about to type. There was too much on my mind tonight to even think about writing. The future of my career was a large part of it. Tony was equally distracting. Even though she'd spent the last 7 years traveling, her lack of contact over that period should have made it clear to me that she wasn't interested in making up. She didn't want to resolve the tension between us, so we could go back to being what we were. That was a hard, bitter-ass pill to swallow. So I hadn't. I wouldn't. Especially now that she was actually in my space again. I wasn't accepting the end of 17 years of friendship without walking away feeling like I'd done everything I could. And unless I was way off base, the fact that she was still pissed meant she still cared. Which meant there was still something. Somewhere. I flipped the laptop closed and stood up. As I did, my phone chimed to remind me I had a lunch meeting with the primary object of my thoughts. The first date for the signing at her parents' bookstore, Tones and Tomes, hadn't worked out. Between the book release being late, the changes to my travel schedule, and life in general, we'd had to push it back. But moving the date meant more time to plan. And for Marjorie and Greg, it meant the ability to recruit help. Tony. Now that she was here, we were supposed to be working directly together to make this signing happen. I didn't want my agent or anyone from the publisher handling it. This was my hometown event, in a bookstore where I'd basically grown up, hosted by owners I considered family. I didn't want the corporation that was Lion Literary anywhere near an event that meant so much. But that meant working with Tony. I was 99.9% certain it was a burden to her, but me. I considered it an opportunity to finally set things right.
2. Tony. I let out a deep, heavy sigh as hot water sprayed over me, working out the knots in my aching limbs. I closed my eyes as I turned my back to the spray, briefly considering the consequences of just staying in there forever. I was tired. Tired as hell. The phone call from last night had gotten pushed back even later, which meant I was up in the middle of the night doing business, only to wake up early to help my parents pack up the house. I'd spent the morning there, then rushed back to the hotel to get cleaned up for my meeting with Justin. A meeting I wished I could cancel, because I didn't want to talk to him. But this signing was one of the biggest reasons my parents had asked me to come home. And when your aging parents asked for help, you made it happen, no matter that you were in serious dislike with the person they wanted you to deal with. I sighed again, then shut off the water. Once I'd dried off and wrapped myself in a robe, I sat on the edge of the bed to rub lotion on as I looked over my dress for the meeting. It was sort of amazing, which fit right in with rule number 28. Never look less than your best when going into a hostile situation. Not that I thought Justin was hostile. No, all the hostility in our situation came straight from me, with good reason. His selfish actions and asshole tendencies had ruined our friendship, and I was still pissed about it. Highly. So even though we'd never been romantic, and as far as I was concerned would never be, the rule still applied. I planned to look good. Unexpected check in the mail good. Fresh from the oven buttermilk biscuits good. First sex with your man after a long trip good. On principle. A glance at the time told me I had about 40 minutes before I needed to leave the hotel. I closed my eyes and laid back, intending to take just one last moment to myself. But I had a hard time getting my eyes open. I blew out a short breath, then picked up my phone from beside me on the bed. I set the alarm to give me 10 minutes, just enough time for a power nap. I tossed the phone back onto the bed and laid back again, closing my eyes. I loved hotel beds, huge and comfortable, with nice sheets and down duvets. Perfection. I didn't waste much of my short 10 minutes drifting off. I was asleep in no time. But annoyance ripped through me when 4 minutes later, according to my phone, pounding at the door to my suite interrupted my nap. A groan escaped my lips as the knocking continued, and I dragged myself up out of bed to the door. A quick peek through the peephole brought a frown to my face. What the hell is he doing here? I belted my robe a little tighter, then pulled the door open to Justin's annoyingly handsome face. Why are you here? We're supposed to be meeting at a restaurant. Neutral ground. I'm here to talk, he said, sidling past me into the room. I quickly covered my chest with my arm, hiding the strain of my nipples against the thin fabric of my robe. That's what the meeting is for. I'll see you in 35 minutes at the restaurant where we agreed to have this meeting. It can't wait. And I'm not here to talk about the signing. I'm here to talk about me and you. I gave him a dry laugh. There is no me and you, Justin. And that's on you. You're the one who stabbed me in the back.
He scoffed, shaking his head. How long are you going to stay mad at me, huh? The shit happened 7 years ago, and I will stay mad as long as I please. I shot back, nostrils flared. My anger faltered into confusion, then arousal, as he stepped toward me, closing the small space between us. I backed up. He stepped forward, and we repeated that dance until my back was against the wall. And he was so close that my breasts were a heavy breath away from grazing his chest. Justin, what are you doing? I don't think you're really that pissed, he said, ignoring my question as he brought a hand to my cheek, brushing a thumb over my skin. I think you've just gotten used to being mad and aren't ready to embrace a different emotion. I swallowed hard, damn near whimpering as his hands dropped, slipping under my robe to grip my ass. What kind of emotion? He didn't answer. He just grinned, then lowered his mouth to mine and kissed me. It was supposed to feel like being kissed by your brother. That's what I'd always pictured, the odd times I allowed my imagination to take me there and wonder. I'd experienced a spark before, probably more than my fair share. Justin and I didn't have that. We were friends. Capital FRIENDS. That was all. No chemistry, no oomph. Only this kiss was oomphy as hell. He gently nibbled on my bottom lip, an action I took as a request for entry. I granted it, and he slipped his tongue inside, licking into my mouth to taste me. His fingers dug into my ass cheeks as he easily lifted me off the ground, hooking my legs around his waist to press me into the wall. I moaned as he deepened the kiss, gasped when he moved a hand between my legs to play in the wetness he'd created there. I arched into his touch, rocking my hips in time to the rhythm he'd created. My mouth fell open as he lowered his mouth to my neck, sucking and biting and kissing while he stroked me with his fingers. I pressed my hand against the wall, closing my eyes as blissful pleasure began to build in my core. Jess, I breathed. What the hell are we doing? Where did this come from? He nipped my collarbone before he raised his head to meet my eyes and shrugged. Hell if I know. This is a dream, T. Everything that happens is coming from your subconscious. So that's a question you have to ask yourself. What the hell? I shot up from my prone position on the bed, panting as my gaze darted around the room. There was no one else there. I blew out a sigh, then ran a hand through my disheveled hair as I reached for my phone to shut off the blaring alarm. The gift of quiet enveloped me for about 2 seconds before a loud knock sounded at the door. I climbed out of bed and made my way to the door, unnerved by the sense of deja vu that played in my head. My heart was racing by the time I put my face up to the peephole, and I audibly gasped when I saw who was on the other side of the hotel door. The nervous butterflies that erupted in my stomach pissed me off. I'd spent 17 years seeing all of Justin, good, bad, and ugly. He'd never made me feel like this. Wasn't supposed to be able to because he was my friend. So what the hell had... Oh, right. Our friendship status, which was his fault, which made what was happening now his damned fault, too. Never in my life had I experienced that kind of dream about Justin, certainly not when we were on good terms. But as soon as he comes into my space again, after all these years, my mind decides it's a good time to play tricks on me. I narrowed my eyes. I really couldn't stand his ass. I unlocked the door and flung it open, catching him by surprise as he raised his hand to knock again. What the hell are you doing here? I asked, not bothering to adjust my tone. One thick eyebrow lifted.
Making sure your mean ass is okay, he answered, looking me up and down.
I crossed my arms over my chest when his gaze lingered there.
I'm perfectly fine.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?